Blog Talk Radio.
Better late than never. We're back once again on the FootballDiehards.com podcast. I am Skip Lacombe, and lots of crazy stuff going on. As always, Brett Favre's saga continues. We bring in, as always, Bob Harris, senior editor with FootballDiehards.com. Bob, how are you doing?
I'm not buying into the better late than never. I don't know. Some days, never's okay.
Well, you know what? That's. I thought you were going to take that a different way. No, I appreciate that. Some days... Late never is okay, I guess. Had some issues with my email trying to get onto the podcast today, but we're all good to go, and we can't waste any time. We got lots to talk about today, Bob.
Well, we have lots of Brett Favre to talk about, for starters. That is a genuine fact. You know, for those who haven't been keeping up with the fun and games, we kind of, you know, it came out. We touched on it last week, and we're pretty sure Favre was going to play. And then it seemed to be stringing out that everything was falling into place. There was a lot of credible reporting, and I mean by credible, like, four different outlets reporting the same thing, that Brad Childress was going to get on a plane, fly down to Hattiesburg, and sit down with Brett Favre. They were going to talk and decide, make some decisions, and figure out what they were going to do about maybe getting Brett Favre on the Minnesota Vikings. And it didn't happen. And when it didn't happen, a single report came out from Yahoo Sports, written by a guy not a lot of people knew, but, you know, behind the scenes people were saying the sources were credible, saying, hey, it was off. Favre called up and said, hey, I'm not going to play. I'm not going to do it. And his agent, Bagdad Bus Cook, was, you know, pretty much playing along the whole time, doing the Sergeant Soles thing. I know nothing, not giving anything up and basically leaving it, you know, wide open to interpretation. Brett hasn't told me anything. And, you know, so we're all left here, you know, wondering. And the people who cover this thing, and, you know, we're all frustrated by this story because it pretty much dominates everything we do. And so you can see a lot of people getting frustrated because Bus Cook's not telling the truth, the Vikings aren't talking, Brett's not talking. And so last night when, you know, it kind of looked like, hey, the thing was dying down, Brett called and said no. Everyone kind of wanted to believe it, I think. And so we all did, except not really, because we all know better. In our heart of hearts, we all know. You know, there's a movie called Once Upon a Time in the West. It's a spaghetti western by Sergio Leone, the same guy that did The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Uh-huh.
And Henry Fonda plays this horrible, brutal killer in this movie, and at one point he's looking at a fellow, and guy's got a suspender and a belt on. And so the Henry Fonda character shoots him and says, you can't trust a man who wears both pants, both his belt and suspenders. I mean, he can't even trust his own pants. Well, you can't trust Brett Favre. He's wearing both belt and suspenders. He wants this not to be a story, but he has to know it's going to be the biggest story of all time.
Well,
and
yeah,
he has to realize the people, you know, on the Vikings that it's affecting, the people in Green Bay that it's affecting. And really, it's just, I think the biggest complaint anyone could have about this, hey, I hope Brett Favre plays. I want Brett Favre to play. I don't care where he plays. I don't care who he plays for. I don't have a rooting stake in this. But I think what everyone wants is for everyone just to come clean and say what's going on, so we have some understanding of the situation. And that's where it gets blown out of control, because everyone's trying to beat everyone with the story, so you're got your ESPN people and your NFL Network people all parked out in front of Favre's house waiting for a puff of white smoke to come out of his chimney. And basically, you know, we all know what's going to happen here. In the end, he's going to end up playing. And I think I said it last week, and I'll say it again this week. Of course he's going to play. Everyone knows he's going to play. And it's all due to bitterness. He just can't get over the fact that the powers that be currently in Green Bay actually think beyond any single year. They're looking for the welfare, the best interests of the overall program, so they didn't, you know, come kiss his tail hard enough to get him to come back when they'd made other plans. And, hey, I understand his bitterness. He was the face of that thing. But at some point, we all learned that football is a team sport, and no one person makes or breaks the team. And at some point, Brett Favre has lost that one person does make or break the team, and he's that person. And
well,
that's my real
big question in this is how much is Favre really hurting his legacy here?
You know, in 10 years, nobody's going to remember all this. We're going to remember, you know, number four is going to be hanging in the Hall of Fame, and we're all going to love him again. I think, you know, in the short term, I mean, hey, Packers fans, you know, he's going to start losing more of those. I mean, there's still a number of people who supported him. I think what bothers a lot of people is that the bitterness is what's driving it. It's hard to understand how someone could be so mad that, you know, if we look back, I mean, if you look back over the timing of the thing last year, it was in March, you know, one of the assistant coaches was visiting and Favre said, maybe I kind of want to play. 3 days later, Ted Thompson and Mike McCarthy say, yeah, that'd be okay if you return, even though we have Aaron Rodgers set to begin as a starter. And then Favre, they were going to fly to meet him, and he kind of said, well, no, maybe I'm changing my mind. And that was it for about a month. And then June, the same thing happened. I want to play again. I want to be the starter, you know. And I think football is a year-round thing now. And teams need to, you know, teams can't just sit there and run their organization based on September through December. They have to do it on a year-round basis. It takes a, you know, the level of preparation has increased over time, and that's part of the problem. And, you know, when you look at what happens, let's take an example for last year. Let's say you bring in a big-name quarterback and you trade away or you ship off your current quarterback and you send him and he plays for a division rival. In the last game of the season, the big gunslinger you brought in comes up short and the guy you cut loose beats you and makes it in the playoffs. And, oh, gosh, that's what happened to the Jets last year when they brought in Brett Favre, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Well, and you know, this whole marriage between, I mean, it seemed like when earlier in the week or the month, this whole meeting between Brett possibly being able to go be a Viking came out, it seemed like the perfect marriage because that's what Brett wanted last year.
Oh, this is the only thing he wants. This is the only thing that will do this because that's the only way he can, you know, if you look at the reporting today, again, by Jeremy Schapp at ESPN, which brought all this back up, said Favre is driven by his disdain for the Packers organization. Now, if this was the first time I'd heard it, I'd go, why? That sounds funny. Imagine that. Who would think that? Except it's the 1,000th time we've heard it. Because it is so. That's what Brett Favre said in an interview on Greta Van Susteren last year. He said it on ESPN after he retired from the Jets this year. He's mad at the Packers. And that's what's driving this entire story. Hey, do I think the Vikings can be a better team with Brett Favre, a quarterback, than with either Sage Rosenfels or Travaris Jackson? You know what? Yes, they can be, but it's not guaranteed. Brett Favre doesn't just show up and make the world better. You know, and at some point, you know, as a head coach of an NFL team, you have some level of credibility you have to maintain in the locker room. I'm not sure bringing in the gunslinger serves you right. Well, it didn't work out well for Eric Mangini. I don't know that it would work out any better for Brad Childress. There are differences, though. I mean, the offensive system is something Favre is more familiar with. You know, it's kind of from the Andy Reid, Mike Holmgren kind of offense is filtered down to all those guys. And so, you know, and the terminology is not a different terminology, and there's some pretty good weapons. And, you know, hey, if I was Brad Childress and I'm sitting there, I'm thinking, man, I got Adrian Peterson, I got Bernard Berry, and I've run in Percy Harvin, I got an up-and-coming tight end in Vicente Shanko. Man, we got a really good defense. We're maybe one guy away from being a Super Bowl team, and that guy may be Brett Favre. I can understand that you know, thinking that way. But you have to have Brett Favre. And that by having Brett Favre, I mean, do you really expect him to show up for the off-season workouts and get himself ready and be part of the team? I mean, he didn't do that in New York. Maybe he would be more motivated in Green, you know, because he'd be playing Green Bay twice a year. But to expect Brett Favre to suddenly become something he hasn't been for, what, 10 years? A guy who works hard with the team in the off-season, a guy who comes in and puts in the extra time and effort in the OTAs and in minicamps, you're not going to get that guy. And I guess that's you know, my biggest issue with going to Minnesota is that part of it. It's a great story. It's job security for me, that's for sure. Following Favre is a full-time industry, and that's all great. But at some point, I think, you know, people start getting a little skeptical. There's the old story of the boy who cried wolf. Hey, Brett Favre wants to come back. If his shoulder allows him to, he will be back, and he will play for the Vikings. And you know, that's how it's going to end up, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, and a lot of people have speculated at this point that he is wanting to go back. He will go back to the Vikings. The Vikings want him, but he doesn't want him to do the preseason camps. He doesn't want to work hard for it. He wants to walk in there and get that job. And a lot of people don't think he's going to be able to really do that. I mean, there's still the question with his shoulder. There's still the question of what kind of shape is he going to be in. And granted, Brett Favre's been playing this game for a long time. He's going to be able to get himself back into a reasonable shape reasonably easy. But a lot of people really do think he's just trying to skip out on the camps. Another really big concern for me is, yes, the Vikings could be much better this year with Brett Favre, but then what's going to happen next year? I mean, Brett Favre is not the answer for the future of them. That may be the answer for right now. And with all the kind of people that they're bringing in right now, is it really a good idea to go ahead and delay the future of the team one more year to give Brett Favre one more chance to stick it to his old team?
If you're Brad Childress and your future is one more year, yes. I mean, if you're a head coach, you better make it a little further into the playoffs than he has to date or into the playoffs, then yes, it is worth it. I mean, you know Brett Favre, you know what he's capable of. But see, that's the point you made is exactly right. You don't get a guy who comes in who's a diligent worker in the off-season program. He's not going to come in and pal around with the guys. He's not going to come in and make himself part of the team. He's going to come in, he's going to be Brett Favre.
Well, yeah, he's not going to mentor anybody. He's going to come in, he's going to play the game, he's going to go home.
And you're going to lose, you know, hey, you brought in Sage Rosenfels. You traded for him to let him battle for the starting job. Tarveris Jackson has struggled, but he played pretty good down the stretch last year, played really well late in the season last year. What are you telling those guys? That we have no faith in you. What are you telling the rest of the team? We have no faith in these guys. And then when Brett Favre comes up short or changes his mind, which I don't think he will, but is obviously possible, or, you know, something happens with the shoulder wears down, or if he wears down like he did last year and you have to go to other guy, I mean, you know, you've already told them that they can't be the guy because you had to go out and drag a guy out of retirement to replace them. So, I mean, you know, I question the overall wisdom of this. I understand, you know, I certainly understand that Favre feels like he can, you know, he can still play, and he's shown he can still play. It just, can he play at that high level for a full sustained season? And I haven't seen that for a couple of years. I mean, you know, you go back to the playoffs 2 years ago, and that brings us to another point. You know, there's a reason the Packers let him go, you know, we're ready to let him move on. And again, we love Brett Favre. He's a great guy, you know, and all that. But when you watch people every day, as the coaching staff does, and as management of a club does, you see players every day. We see, you know, the games. We see brief interviews. They're there every day, all day with these players. They knew something we didn't about Brett Favre, and they knew something we didn't about Aaron Rodgers. They couldn't not, because they spend all day with these guys. They work closely with them on a constant basis throughout the year. So for us to sit here and criticize someone for saying, oh, they thought Aaron Rodgers was better, well, hey, it turns out Aaron Rodgers was better last year. That's all there is to it. And if whatever success the Packers didn't have wasn't because Brett Favre wasn't there, unless Brett Favre played defense, which he didn't. So, you know, again, be careful what you wish for Minnesota. I do think you're going to get him back. I do think he's going to wear the purple helmet with the horns, and it will be an amazing story, and there will be two very huge games, and we'll all get very excited about him. But to think Brett Favre is the answer to your problems long-term, he absolutely isn't. Short-term, he might be, but that's no guarantee.
In 2007, Brett threw for 28 touchdowns through 15 picks for a grand total of 4,155 yards. Does he have another season like that in him?
I don't know that he does. You know, a lot is going to depend on the shoulder. You know, the story today is that his x-rays have been sent. But, you know, if it's a tendon problem, I'm not sure what they're going to learn from the x-rays, except the shoulder is structurally sound, which I don't think anyone questions. There may be, I think the goal is to see how bad the injury is, what kind of procedure might be needed. There's different ways they can go on this. And one of them may be just to complete the tear, have a surgeon go in with a scope and complete the tear, and that way there's no pain or discomfort. And really, it's not something that keeps you from throwing or helps you throw. It's just something that causes irritation. I've heard it described as being like a hangnail. It's just an irritant that's there, and it's painful, but it doesn't keep you from physically accomplishing things. So if he maybe gets that cut off, you know, gets that tear completed through, and he can play another year, you know, he could put up numbers similar to that, and maybe he doesn't have to with a different running game like he'd have in Minnesota with Adrian Peterson. So, hey, I'm not looking for the big numbers from him. I've not been impressed with him. You know, I go back to the playoff game against the Giants. I mean, I just thought he was so horrible in that game. You know, it was just
he just
looked like he didn't have it anymore. You know, that last game with the Packers, he just didn't look like he had it. And he didn't look like he had that desire at the end of the year. And I know he was sick and it was very cold, but he seems to have struggled some in cold weather, you know, the last couple years. Now going to Minnesota, he's indoors. I think he'd only have one outdoor cold weather game. So that's, you know, that works in his favor. But hey, if his shoulder's up to it, he's there. I mean, we're talking about this as, you know, in terms of hypotheticals, but really the only thing standing between him and that purple uniform and two wonderful chances to give a whack at Ted Thompson and Mike McCarthy is that shoulder.
Man, and those would be some marquee games. So we're not expecting any of the huge numbers from him. One number we can guarantee that'll be big is number of ticket sales, number of jersey sales. How much of that is possibly just being able to give a little economic stimulus up to Minnesota?
You know, hey, none of this is about it. All this is all about Brett Favre sticking it to the Packers. I mean, as far as he's concerned. The Vikings, I think, you know, this is Brad Childress saying, man, my job is on the line. I need to win some games. I have a lot of good talent lined up, and what's my glaring weakness? Or my biggest question mark, quarterback. I'm just not sold that Brett Favre is the answer to that question, but, you know, hey, it looks like he's going to get a chance to prove me wrong.
All right. Well, I'm sure the Favre talk will continue over the coming weeks. I mean, it's pretty much unavoidable at this point. But let's go ahead and move on to a little new area right now. Vic had a little special meeting from Tony Dungy earlier in the week. What was that about?
You know, there's a, yeah, it sounds like, you know, the various theories are being spun out there that maybe that he's kind of been, that Dungy was sent by Commissioner Goodell to really get a good feel of what, you know, if you remember, Roger Goodell said before he reinstated Fix, he wants to get a sense of his true remorse for his criminal lifestyle that he maintained for a long period of time. And it seems to me that, you know, I don't know, you know, I don't see Tony Dungy as the kind of guy who puts himself into a situation to get his name in front of anybody. I don't see him putting himself in a situation to make somebody look good that he doesn't think look good. I think he's an honest broker in this. And if he goes back and reports to the commissioner, perhaps, that, hey, Mike Vick really does look like he's serious, that he really is remorseful, I think, you know, the commissioner probably respects Tony Dungy and wanted to get a little something out of him. I wonder, you know, it seems awful high profile making the trip to prison. I guess that's the only issue that seems out of place to me, is it seems like a little bit of a grandstand play. He could have waited till he got to his house and nobody would have maybe really known. But instead, you know, we get a little bit of a dog and pony show that it's done in prison, and we hear about it a long time in advance. And, you know, so there are concerns. But, you know, I think the you know, we've talked about Vic in the past, and I think he's going to be a really hard sell in a number of parts of the country. But on either coast, I think, you know, you could probably see him finding a team and maybe if he's reinstated, actually restarting his career or reinventing himself, not as a quarterback necessarily, but as some kind of a wildcat player. And he's done his time, and you know, the only thing that's going to keep him from not getting back in the game is his own attitude and how he expresses himself to Roger Goodell. And if the meeting with Tony Dungy, I think, is the first step to bringing him back into the fold.
It's kind of interesting because it's going to be a PR nightmare for whatever team decides to take a chance on Vic. And I can't think of too many instances in which a football player has gone through this type of a PR nightmare, or this type of a legal case, something akin to like the Kobe Bryant thing in basketball, or what Manny Ramirez is going through. Is Vic going to be able to come back and really be a legitimate player? I mean, are fans going to forgive him if he produces? Or is there a story like this in the past when a big football player has had this type of a bad PR?
I don't think there's anyone come back with this kind of scarlet letter. There's been guys that have come back from, you know, various indiscretions and problems and legal issues, but I mean, this was a pretty big deal. A lot of these things that we're seeing now, including the Brett Favre, a lot of it gets caught up in this, you know, the fact that we are, you know, the news cycle is now 30 seconds in this world. I mean, we've got to keep it cranked up, and the heat has to be turned up. So, and the other problem is there's people who stand to make money off this. There's groups like PETA who see this as a chance to get their name in front of things and get their, you know, get their message out to people, whether they're really, you know, making a useful contribution to the situation or not, they're going to be injecting themselves. So
that would be a marketing tool for them to use Michael Vick for their marketing.
Exactly. And there's been talk where, you know, that there's been some kind of, you know, talk of an agreement between Vick and PETA. I'm not sure I'm buying that. But, you know, absolutely PETA's going to use this. And I think when you look at, you know, the possibilities, I mean, it's going to take a certain kind of community that's going to accept him in. And there's, you know, there's not a whole lot of those, and then you have to make sure the management in those areas where he might be accepted back is on board with bringing him back. If the commissioner reinstates him, he's going to play somewhere. Whether it causes, you know, the amount of hullabaloo that goes with it will depend on who decides to give him a shot.
Yeah, absolutely. I got to tell you, too, it was kind of interesting. Last week I saw someone walking around downtown Albuquerque wearing a Michael Vick jersey from the Falcons. I just hadn't seen that for a while, and it kind of caught me off guard.
Yeah, you don't see a lot of that. Was he walking a dog?
You know, I don't think he was, actually. I should have paid. He was had a cute little toy poodle up in his arms. All right, moving on to some other players now, too. I'm sure Michael Vick conversation is going to be continuing in the coming weeks, too, and up until, July 20th, is that his release date?
He's out the end of this month. He goes into the home confinement, and he's going to work a little construction, and at some point he'll sit down with Roger Goodell, who, you'll remember, he lied right to the guy's face. So he's going to have his work is cut out for him when he meets with Goodell.
Absolutely. All right, some players who had come off some injuries off during the offseason and later in the year, LaDainian Tomlinson started to look really good coming off of his groin injury from last year. Obviously good news for the Chargers.
Yeah, and it does sound like he's doing everything. Again, I don't want to splash cold water on every single thing in the world, but you know, this is been 2 years now since he's made it through the full season. Now, he's made it through the regular season, but he hasn't been able to finish playoffs. And, you know, you just start wondering about a running back at this age. But right now, he is healthy, 100% healthy. I hope he stays that way. They've got Darren Sproles there. They intend to take some of the load off LT, but not a lot of it. If you listen to North Turner the last 2 weeks, you know, he's talking 300 touches, you know, rushing and receiving for LT. So that's a pretty significant workload, and I hope he holds up to it. If he does, he's going to provide great value in fantasy drafts because obviously he's going to slip down. A lot of people are going to be thinking Sproles is going to be stealing some carries, and if LT stays healthy, might not be the case. So, you know, could end up getting a really good value pick on your draft by grabbing LT.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the past 2 years, LT has been one of the top three. Actually, the past 2 years, he's been the number one pick in my draft both years. I mean, so certainly that will not happen this year. But
yeah, he's going to fall down. And, hey, if you know, there comes a point where everyone's value, you know, you reach that tipping point. And you know, I know I've got a draft coming up next week. I'm draft 11. So, boy, if he fell down that far, I'd be pretty amazed. And I wouldn't hesitate to snag him right there.
Absolutely. Another player coming off of a hip surgery during the offseason, Kurt Warner, is finally getting back into stride, too.
Yeah, he seems to be fine. He's been working out without any issues. You know, I don't think they'll push any of these guys too much in the OTAs and the mini camps, but I don't see anything going to slow, you know, nothing's going to slow him down, you know, in terms of the coaching changes, the surgery. Doesn't look like personnel changes are going to be an issue. You know, Ken Wisenhut's still going to call the plays with Todd Haley gone, and it's still going to be an aggressive downfield. You know, they're still going to be looking to throw down the field, maybe with a little better rushing attack if they get Beanie Wells and he's able to stay healthy and give them a little more of a threat out of the backfield, or a little more of a consistent threat, I should say. Hey, it's all, you know, the Cardinals are, you know, I think the Cardinals are for real. I don't know, you know, I'm not going to say they're a Super Bowl contender every year, but they can play with anyone, and it's, a lot of it's due to Kurt Warner and that passing attack, and I don't see us slowing down.
Some other breaking news from a couple of hours ago. Lorenzo Neal is heading to Oakland. He will be a Raider next year. That's going to have a pretty big impact on him, Kano.
Yeah, I wonder if that's not going to have a bigger impact in Baltimore. You know, I mean, his presence, he was brought in because they decided LaRon McClain could, you know, their previous fullback would maybe do a little duty at tailback, and turns out he was the leading rusher on the team and a pretty effective weapon. And so without the true fullback, you know, that they brought in when they were using McClain at the tailback, that might be a little bit of an issue for Baltimore. I think in Oakland, maybe it's a sign that Tom Cable is going to, you know, focus on the run a little more, maybe make a little better use of Darren McFadden and hopefully Michael Bush, and don't forget Justin Fargas. So, you know, I mean, they've got a pretty good stable of running backs, and there's no doubt Lorenzo Neal in his long career has opened a lot of holes for a lot of big-name guys, all of whom still appreciate him greatly. I've spoken to LaDainian Tomlinson in the past, who ran behind Neal for a long time, and basically, you know, he calls him Superman. Tomlinson calls Neal Superman. Just there's no one that he would rather run behind, I can assure you. So, hey, someone's going to make out like a bandito on this one. I'm hoping it's going to be more Darren McFadden. We're hearing a little bit of out of some reports out there that they are going to try and get McFadden into the mix a little more this year, maybe a little less rotation. It'll be something worth watching in training camp in the preseason. But if that's the plan, having a big guy like Neal blowing up linebackers can be very helpful.
And this move also marks the best move Al Davis has made since the end of the season last year.
I think that's safe to say, yeah. I mean, you know, I'm hearing good things about this Hayward Bay. There is Hayward Bay, the receiver they took in the first round. He's impressing mini camps. But again, you know, so much of what we hear in mini camps, you know, it's mini camps, it's rookie camps, it's, you know, it's one day in May that someone looks good, and we, you know, so we should not let these reports, you know, seal our impression. We should use them as data points and connect them over a series of time. You know, if we hear again the next workout that, yes, this Hayward Bay is looking really good, and you keep hearing that, then you start building a little buzz. I try not to get too caught up. I'm hearing some of the same things about the Giants rookies after today's practices, that Hakeem Nicks would look like a man among boys. And, you know, you hear things like that, and, hey, it's interesting stuff, but we shouldn't get too carried away. But getting back to Oakland, you know, there was a couple other things that went on there today that came out today. One I thought was interesting, Javon Walker had secret knee surgery. Much like a secret trip to Vegas, I guess he doesn't really feel compelled to tell them everything that's going on. The Raiders were caught off guard. They say he's going to be ready for camp, but given some of the moves they've made at receiver and the youth movement, they're obviously going on the outside with Hayward Bay. They've got Chaz Schillens, Johnny Lee Higgins, guys they liked last year. You know, I wouldn't get my hopes up too high for Walker, and maybe the surgery's a non-issue. The bigger issue, maybe the best receiver on the team, is tight end Zach Miller. He had sports hernia surgery, so he'll be some, that'll be something to watch going into camp. That's, you know, that's been the guy that Jamarcus Russell has looked to the most, and he's been one of the more productive tight ends in the league in terms of catches and, you know, receptions and yardage. So that'll be a big one to watch this year.
Now, what's going on with the Raiders keeping all this type of information secret? Or, I mean, there's been a lot of, I don't want to say a lot, but these secret surgery type situations where players are going and getting things done with very little media attention.
Well, in this case, in Walker's case, the team didn't know. The team didn't find out until he showed up. Tom Cable's the one who said, well, we didn't really know about it. So that was super secret surgery, I guess. You know, there's been some other procedures that have come up, too. Nick Folk in Dallas, the kicker, had some hip surgery. And, you know, it kind of came out of the blue. His hip was an issue late last year and apparently wasn't healing the way they wanted, so they decided to get it done. But, you know, hey, as the New England empire propagates, and, you know, you've got guys now in Denver and Kansas City and Cleveland who are Bill Belichick disciples, you know, they're and the Parcells tree does the same thing, you know, shutting down and keeping the information to a minimum. You know, it seems to be spreading, folks. Get used to it.
Yes, indeed. Finally, one story we wanted to touch on is last Saturday, the Cowboys practice facility in Irvine, the big dome bubble, I'm sure everyone's seen the video now, collapsed, fell down to about 70 people, injuring 12 of them, also paralyzed one of them from the waist down. Kind of a freak accident happening in Irvine, right?
Yeah, it's kind of a horrifying thing. You know, they had all the cameras were in there, so there's lots of footage of the thing coming down on people. Kenny Beam, I think his name was, scouting assistant for the team, is paralyzed. Jody Camillus, special teams coach, broke some vertebrae. There were a number of other injuries. No players. It was a rookie camp, so, you know, there was no frontline guys in any danger. But if you watch the videotape, you'll see the entire coaching staff. I mean, Dave Campo was there. Wade Phillips was there. I mean, based on what I saw, they were lucky that nobody was killed. I mean, that's, you know, it's not a huge, heavy, regular building structure, but all the steel
lights
up there
were falling down.
Yeah, that holds the skin up. That's, you know, that's pretty heavy stuff. And I think they came out lucky. And, you know, we'll see what comes of the investigation. There's a lot of finger pointing going on already. People trying to lay the blame. But there's an engineering company that put the whole thing together. That's also been involved with two other similar structures that have come down. So we may a little bit of a trend of what's going on there.
Very good. Well, Bob, we talked about all kinds of stuff today, but I do want to get your final words on Brett Favre. Over under, what do you think the chances are, if you had to put money on it, that Brett Favre's going to be in purple next year?
1,000%.
Really? You don't think there's any chance he's not?
The only chance he's not is his shoulder. So we'll call it 99, but, you know, the shoulder is going to be the determining factor. I was more surprised at yesterday's report that it was off. And, you know, the funny thing was when nobody would confirm it and they, you know, Favre's PR firm, ESPN, wasn't coming out with a statement for him. You know, it seemed fishy at the time, and then today's reporting from his PR firm, ESPN, did confirm what we thought. So, hey, whatever's coming from ESPN is coming from Brett Favre at some point. So,
absolutely. Well, he retires, he unretires. He wants to play, he doesn't want to play. He wants to talk to Brad, he doesn't want to talk to Brett. He wants to meet, he doesn't want to. I'm sure that story is just going to be continuing. And, of course, you're going to be able to follow all the news and views on the website, footballdiehards.com. Bob Harris is a senior editor with footballdiehards.com. Any closing words, Bob?
I think that's it. I think we're, you know, Favre watch continues. Let's enjoy it.
I know it will. It will be good to go. We'll have a. Hopefully, we'll be able to get some resolution and actually have some solid stuff to talk about by the next one, instead of just speculation of this person reporting, that person reporting. But be sure to check out the website, footballdiehards.com. It'll update it all day long, all the football news you can handle. Until next week, I'm Skip Lacombe for footballdiehards.com podcast.